So I was watching the Michael Kay show the other day, and they had this little interesting challenge about, I guess, some recent news in the MLB. And, you know, about the latest scandal, if you even want to call it that, about the Blue Jays player, Reese McGuire. Okay. The Atlanta Braves played Toronto in Atlanta a few nights ago. And if you don't know, each player gets a walk-up song before they go to the plate. And the Braves organist decides to pay homage to Michael Jackson. And I guess throw jabs at Reese McGuire for what he got arrested for earlier this year. What did he get arrested for? Public masturbation. And what was the song? Beat It. Yes, I said it. It was Beat It. And at first, I didn't really care, right? And then I sat with it for a little while. And then I realized, I truly do not care at all. But I'm surprised that this dude still has his job. Like, that's a pretty hefty crime, and I'm surprised there wasn't any sexual offender charges slapped on this man's record. But if the legal system doesn't do much about it, his social circles will definitely get on his ass. Right, like, this story circulating will certainly put a dent in his future relationships. Because I'm certain that this was something that he was going to take to his grave, but now it's the headline of most sports talk shows and Twitter pages and sports analysts and what have you. Like, I can only imagine the conversation that he has to have with his family about this whole self-entanglement he got caught up in. And, like, his future relationships, you know, will be something that he'll have to explain himself on in almost every conversation, in every circumstance. Right, like, this is something that he can't escape from. He's going to have to face the demons at some point. He's going to have to come to grips with what he's done and the people who have questions for him. Right, but on to the Braves, though. I got a question for y'all. Y'all the TMZ of the MLB? Y'all was out here with a very subtle shade. Yeah, y'all did some slash it just for the narrative to be made, knowing that boy's past would get brought back into light? Like, I'm not even mad or sticking up for the dude. I'm just wondering, like, who made the call on that decision? And who had the intel and felt compelled to dry snitch just for a gag, just for jokes, just for the kicker, just for the laugh? Like, was the organist acting out on his own choice? Like, was he just like, yeah, I got something for your ass, homeboy. Watch this. Come on now. And I'm just curious to see if dude comes out with a video discussing it or if he's going to go on one of these shows and talk about it. Like, was the organist tipped off? Like, does the organist have a personal vendetta against Reese? These are answers that I need. These are questions I need answers to. Like, there's way too many questions I need answers for a situation that isn't as pressing as the incident itself. Like, I can give a fuck about them playing the song. I'm more concerned with how come this is now coming into light when this is something that happened earlier in the year. And this isn't just like, I don't know. Like, this is public masturbation. Like, this is some serious shit. Like, I need context on the situation. Like, the public masturbation is more, I guess, concerning than the song being played. But regardless of what this man's future career looks like, I have a feeling it won't be as debilitating as we would like it to be anyway. I feel like this won't be something that really is going to damage this man's career. Like, a young white dude with some money playing professional baseball will probably get over this minor setback. If you even want to call it that. Like, how long is this really going to be an issue? I don't know. Like, I'm talking about it. Like, I don't even care like that. It was just an interesting thing, like, to think about. Like, because there's so many different questions. Like, was the organist acting out on his own will? Was this an organizational decision? Did a player know some things about him and said, yeah, we're going to do this little shade towards Reese? I don't know. I got no idea. Regardless of what this man's future career looks like, I think this is going to be more awkward and more challenging for him in his personal life than it would be in his professional life. And part of me is upset about that, but I get it. I understand. I know why that's the case. But either way, there's too many questions to be raised and very few answers to be had. But shout out to the Atlanta Braves for being creative. Because again, when I watched the video and I heard the song, I didn't really catch it. Like, if it wasn't for the caption and knowing a little bit of the backstory, then I wouldn't even, like, think twice of it. Like, you'd have to really pay attention to it to really understand what was going on. And I didn't really know. I heard it. I didn't really know. I didn't, like, catch it. I wasn't like, oh my God, look, they played that. Like, I had to hear it. I had to know that that was the song that was being played
for Reese when he walked up to the plate. I'm curious to see if he talks about it. If I were him, I'd just keep my mouth shut and let this thing blow over. Because really, it's like one of those little interesting stories, but it's not going to gain a whole lot of attention. Especially with the way the countries are going right now. And who it's affecting. Reese McGuire. I don't know if you care enough or not. But I would watch out who you tell these things to. If you told anybody, I would be careful with how you go about telling your personal business. And for your future conversations with your parents, I hope it goes well. I hope that, and when I say goes well, I don't mean that they forgive you. I just hope that it's comical, interesting. I hope it's something that you can tell your kids. Actually, I don't even know if you tell your kids that. Would you tell your kids that? Obviously not when they're young, but like, you know, when they get older. Is that like a funny story to tell? I don't know how he operates. Clearly, he told somebody and he got in trouble for it. So, you know, I don't know. Interesting. Interesting little story. Let me move away from that dude, Reese McGuire, to talk about some real important stuff. Okay. Let's talk about Cori Bush. You got to know the name by now. This is the woman who defeated the Representative William Lacey Clay Jr. out in Missouri, who had a 10-year hold as the state's congressman. She became the first black woman to ever hold the position in Missouri's history. And you probably know her, as I've come to know her, as an active member and leader in the Ferguson protest for Michael Brown back in 2014. She's a nurse, pastor, mom, politician, who now has graduated to congressional elected official. It's important to note that at one point she was a homeless mother who struggled to get out of the dirt and back on her feet to make ends meet for her and her family. This woman is the voice of the good fight, y'all. The call to racial justice, one of the voices for fighting for those who faced domestic abuse, sexual abuse, racist targeting, low income troubles, all things that she had to battle too in her entire life. And in my opinion, a woman so fearless and willing to be 100% who she is, despite the world telling her that who she is should never or could never be where she got, and to still do it anyway, she's got my respect 100%. Easily. And let me just get away from like the little rah-rah real quick to make a very easy but necessary point. She's a dark-skinned woman, y'all. Like, this wasn't supposed to happen for her or for people who look like her. Like, what some would call radical stances, she's been able to maintain that and refer to her start as a part of the frontline protesters out in the street. Like, her roots aren't necessarily political in nature, but her devotion to bettering the community as a civilian within that community is what, at least for me, like, gets me gravitated to her, her cause, her message. Like, she often says in her speeches, like, she wasn't supposed to make it this far. Like, she wasn't supposed to be here. But she did. And if there's anything that these future politicians could learn, is to take a lesson from some of these leaders in these grassroots organizations about being on the front lines, being there with the people, communicating with the people, for the people. And to be quite honest, I think these grassroots organizers will be the future of this country's leadership, for real. That they have the support of the common good, the hidden tsunami of forgotten or left behind voices that typically gets cast away, that rarely ever get their thoughts and needs considered. Which reminds me, I need to shout out Marquita Bradshaw, who I read about when I was looking into Cori Bush's win. I think she was mentioned in like a Washington Post article. Marquita Bradshaw's like all for positive, you know, environmental change. But she won out in Tennessee and became the first black woman to win the Democratic nomination. Now, there's people out here who are doing historical things right under our nose. And yes, there's people who are paying attention to it. And there's people who've been supporting her since she came into light back in 2014. But we often forget that there's people out there who are a part of the community working for the community too. The voice of the people come from the streets, y'all. And Cori Bush is one of the young men and women out here making it happen for real. So congratulations to her. And I hope she's able to make good on her promises to the community, which I am confident in the fact that she will moving forward, along with the other young men and women who are doing their part to fight the good fight. But I had to make sure that I got Cori Bush in there and put some, you know, and give her the light and give her the congratulations that she needs. Not that she needs to hear it from me or that she'll ever hear this in general, but just, you know, a way to, I guess, pay homage, to show support, to, you know, just recognize those who are really out here trying to make a difference under extreme circumstances that, like she says, she wasn't supposed to be there. Someone who looks like her, talks like her, acts like her, wasn't supposed to be there. But guess what? Guess what, America? She's here. Y'all better watch out. Because she's on her shit, man. You go listen to one of her speeches, man. She's on her shit. She knows what she's talking about. She knows what she's doing, man. With everything that she had to go against her, with everything that she had to go fight against, yeah. She got it. She can handle her own. Congratulations, Cori Bush, on a well-deserved win. So could we agree that COVID is just not a political scheme created in America after news of protests in Jerusalem calling for the resignation of their prime minister? Benjamin Netanyahu, prime minister of Israel, is under the hot seat for his mishandling of the coronavirus. Like, in news of the thousands of protesters, his Twitter team decided to make a statement about the events. They took to Twitter to talk about the things that are going on in their country. I got the tweet verbatim. Netanyahu says, or his team or whoever came up with the tweet, quote, "While Prime Minister Netanyahu is fighting to get Israel's economy back to normal and to transfer funds and grants to Israel's citizens, Channel 12 is doing everything to encourage Lapid and Ayman Odeh's left-wing demonstrations, which incite murder against the prime minister and his family." End quote. Let me start by saying I have zero understanding of the nuance of social and political life over there that occurs over there. But what it seems to me is that there's another version of Trump just across the sea over in the east. You want to know how I know he's another version of Trump? Let me rattle off a few things that I listed up here. Deflection of wrongdoing. We've seen Trump do that since the start of his presidency. He gets called out for doing something. He doesn't even deny it. He just points to somebody else and says, look how bad they are. Look at how they're fucking up. Gaslighting protests by claiming their actions have a different intent than the one that they truly have. Right? And we've seen this with Colin Kaepernick too, right? The reason that he chose to do that demonstration about kneeling, it wasn't to disrespect the flag. He came out and made a statement about it during a press conference, during an interview, claiming, or not even claiming, stating purely that his acts were to show, or to rather to shed light on police brutality that is running rampant in America. Not like it's new, but that it's been going on for decades. But yet, people have attached him to a different thing. That's the only difference that I see. Anti-maskers, can you please rub together those two brain cells that you got and make a complete thought about what's going on in the world? Because let me just say this real slow. COVID is not just a problem in the United States. And I know that you want it to be that way so bad. But yes, other countries are suffering from this virus too. They're dealing with a health crisis too. See, our country has chosen to let fate decide facts rather than let facts decide facts. Some of the people in this country have stressed the importance of not letting government mandates, corporate powerhouses limit your independence, limit your right to free will. But when it comes, but in the face of a black man, woman, or trans person being killed by the police, the need for compliance and respect is first and foremost in their eyes. No questions asked. See, there is no challenge in authority unless your melanin is a little bit off color. The protests against masks come as a feeling of, like, we need to protect ourselves because this is the first step in mind control and suppression. Protests against police brutality get looked at as, like, whining, acting out of emotion, rather than looking at the evidence from stats that say otherwise, or a desire to act dangerously, when in fact the groups who have been targeted have a clear and current history of this suppression. Now you tell me, out of those two groups, who's brainwashed? And the thing is, it doesn't have to be so divided. It doesn't have to be that way. But I feel like we're at a point now where you're either on the right side, which is being an advocate for human rights, or you're somebody who's getting in the way of that. And you may not be actively a part of these groups that try to discredit any Black Lives movement or any human rights movement, but you may be indifferent and you're just clogging up the system. You're clogging the route to get to progress. Those people out in Jerusalem wanting their leaders to be the people they need them to be, I wish y'all the best over there, because I know how that feeling feels over here, and it sure frustrates the fuck out of me. It frustrates the fuck out of me. So I hope they get it right over there. I hope you keep fighting the good fight over there. You keep fighting for what's right. And we'll keep doing that over here, because it's important. It's not even important. It's necessary. It's a must. So for my fall semester, my semester is met with some new things going on. A new school I just transferred into, a new reality to live in, and a new class set up with Zoom, which I'm very much against and reluctant to do. And it's just a personal inconvenience for me. Like, I don't mind doing it. It's just the whole concept that I'm not in favor for. Because, like, I've taken online courses in the past, multiple ones. And honestly, I prefer the pre-COVID online setup of having to do everything on your own time. Because this Zoom stuff seems over the top for what could be covered in much better time-wise through, like, a PowerPoint. But hey, what do I know? You know, I prefer the distance learning because it's my own schedule and I don't have to worry about going to class, dealing with these different people, having to just sit there. You know what I mean? Like, I could be doing different things at the same time if it's distance, you know. But I just feel for those international kids who aren't getting clear information on the state of the openings or being hit with like ultimatums on their allowance to entry, based on the style of classes taken. Like, admission and getting into boarding is already difficult on its own, let alone the president making it almost impossible for these kids to continue their education safely, if at all. And the fact that they aren't able to receive similar benefits to those who accept the in-person classes is, like, mind-boggling. Like, we're making ultimatums for these kids to be able to learn because of our failure to report and adhere to the proper safety guidelines of dealing with something like this, of dealing with the pandemic. And again, I think I talked about it a little bit in the last little, podcast that I did. You know, with these college kids, they're in a possible decision. They're left with impossible circumstances to deal with. And I don't want to use the word impossible too much, but it's just daunting. Like, you're making these kids choose between health, education, athletics in some cases, and, you know, not just their own health, but the health of their families and loved ones. You know, it's a difficult time. It's a difficult time to be a student, and not just a student, but one who has to accommodate for travel accommodations.
who has to accommodate for all these different moving parts to get into the United States, to get into these colleges. Because I know some of these colleges are pushing back move-ins. I know the one that I'm at is dorms. And I know they pushed back the shit for like 3 weeks. 3 weeks. These kids are now unsure if they can even get in. And now the time that they had scheduled is getting pushed back or is left for review is to be determined. It's a crazy time right now. It's a crazy time for these kids. And the only people who suffer because of this are the kids, are the people trying to get education. That's who suffers. This may be a hit on the states, like, you know, from a federal point of view, like this may be trying to send a message to states and universities, applying pressure to them, when really it's the kids who are getting fucked in this situation. It's the students who have to make sense of all of this. It's a damn shame that they have to choose between them trying to make a better life for themselves and trying to stay alive. That's the real crime in all of this. And on that note, I want to say thank you again. If you are listening, I very much appreciate it. There should be another episode probably within the week. I don't really have a concrete date about when I'm posting this stuff. And originally, it was supposed to be maybe like every 8 days. Now, I'm kind of like, as soon as I have 2 episodes in mind before I publish one. So I already have the next one pretty much set up and done. But I have published dates that I can post them and get them released at. I don't really know as far as a consistent schedule what I'm going to do. But nonetheless, thank you again for letting me say this. Again, if you want to start your own podcast, Anchor offers great tools to get you started. It's free. Download the Anchor app to get started. And it also translates to different little apps too. So it can go to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, I think Google Podcasts. There's another one I can't think of right now. Radio Public, a few different ones. And it gets monetized too. You put the little ads in there. Clearly, you probably hear the ads. I gotta work on the transitioning because you may just be like, "Yo, this dude just said this like, like this dude just said this like 10 minutes ago." But you put the ads in there to make some money and everything like that. But anyway, thank you for letting me say this. My name is Antonio Laborte, and thanks for listening.